In this episode of Football 301, it's the Week 2 preview. Charles McDonald joins me for some Lost in the Sauce games, a Haas fight of the week, a couple Hail Marys at the end, and a new segment, amongst other things. We also catch up on the Brock Purdy injury news. Very, very fun show as always. It's Week 2. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Great show for you today. We always have great shows on Football 301, but especially today, it's the Week 2 preview. I'm just going to jump right into it. Joining me to preview the Week 2 slate of NFL games, my guy, like every Thursday and every Sunday, Mr. Four Verts, Charles McDonald. How are you doing today? Great to see you.
Phew, I'm alive, you know. Tough day yesterday. Had to put down one of the dogs.
Oh, I know, I'm
so... Yeah, been a little tough, but it'll be good to talk football for an hour and just get my brain off it for a little bit, you know.
Forget about it for a minute. How old?
Yeah.
You don't mind me asking?
Ten.
So. Okay.
Had a good run today, you know. Had a good run.
I know. Never easy. I know. Hopefully I can distract you a little bit with some EPA stats and success rate observations and all that good
stuff. It's always
good. But
it's always good.
Sorry for your loss, Chuck. Everyone send Chuck and his family some love. It's always tough to lose a pup. But today, like I said, we're previewing Week 2. We're going to start off with some Brock Purdy news as well. But before that, also check us out on the Yahoo Sports Network, our brand new streaming TV channel. The Yahoo Sports Network is available to stream on leading fast services. It's also streaming live 24/7 on yahoosports.tv, where you can catch all of those shows on your phone or on your browser. All right, real quick, before we jump into Week 2 and do some Lost in the Sauce and some Haas fights and introducing a couple new segments as well, Brock Purdy, just like every other 49er that seems to be on this entire roster, is out 2 to 5 weeks with a turf toe variant, which is okay, which is fun phrasing, but per rap sheet, per Ian Rappaport from NFL Network, I'm sorry. Mac Jones will start, which is going to fulfill a prophecy that I think Kyle Shanahan casted a few years ago. 49ers play the Saints this week. Charles, what do you think about the 49ers right now? What did you think about that Week 1 game? You know, because we didn't really touch on it on Sunday. Yeah, what were some of your takeaways? What do you feel about them?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it was kind of a sloppy game on both sides a little bit, but I guess I just find all of this funny because there was so much discussion back in 2021 when they traded 3 first round picks to get to number 3 that this was going to be for Mac Jones and ended up being for Trey Lance. And all of a sudden we still end up back here where Mac Jones is now starting like for maybe a month for the 49ers. But man, if it's the Mac Jones that I watched play in Jacksonville last year, I don't see this going very well because it's not like, like this 49 supporting cast, I think especially like up front, is not the strongest that it's been. You know, they're kind of relying on Ricky Pearsall, who's a second year receiver, to carry low the receiving game. The offensive line,
He looks great.
I thought the offensive line had a really rough game, though, in their first game against Seattle. And then, you know, to get the news that they re-signed Colton McKivitz, I was a little puzzled by that, too. But this kind of seems like an offense where I think for the first time in a long time, it feels like the quarterback has to carry maybe a bigger load than the past, but I don't think that Mac Jones is that guy. So maybe you can beat the Saints, but it's tough to like have this as your quarterback for a month when you know like every game counts in the NFL by the end of the season. Like we see teams all the time, like you start out 0-2 and you're like, man, if we had just gotten one of those wins at the start. And now if you're 1-0, but if you're looking at like a month with Mac Jones, that's pretty tough sled. So I'm a little worried about where the 49ers are because I don't think that they have the supporting cast to support this anymore.
Yeah, how you just ended that, that's kind of my feelings on it, is that if this was full-fledged super Avengers, you know, team cast of characters around Mac Jones, yeah, totally. He could operate. Mac Jones can get you through a jam. Like he can operate on offense. You know, we remember the last year with the Patriots with Patricia and Bill Belichick checked out, which is a little bit more obvious now. And also, you know, Mac Jones last year in Jacksonville, even though fantasy players are obsessed with the Brian Thomas Jr. stats that he had because he was just chucking up that ball. And he was eating good back in Jacksonville. You know, that's where it was hometown. And he looks a lot better in the preseason, looked a little slimmer. You know, he'll get you some easy, or not easy, but nice efficient scrambles. And he can operate in offense and he's pretty accurate. But that's the thing. It's Kittle's out. Trent Williams is banged up and he had 10 pressures on Sunday charted. It wasn't as bad as that. Like he was better in the run game. He has taken a step back though. You know, the rest of the offensive line, like you mentioned, is just iffy. Like, you know, CMC can do a lot, but he came into the game. He almost missed week one. You know, like that was a big storyline for the whole week. And now that, like I said, Kittle's the safety net of this offense, safety blanket, and also an explosive play weapon, also a blocker. So Kyle Shanahan could patch this together, but it's like, this is a lot of Pro Bowlers. There's a lot of guys just dropping left and right. So the West is wide open, and it's just kind of like, it's never easy. And New Orleans is feisty. So that game's going to be a little more interesting than you thought.
I mean, Spencer Rattler wasn't terrible on Sunday, you know?
Yeah. Compared to Mark Bolger.
Yeah. That's not a bad comp. And I also see why the Saints started him over Shuck, because, I mean, Shuck was significantly worse than that in the preseason. At least Rattler gives you a chance to, like, fuel an offense to evaluate people around him. So I was tentatively, pleased with Rattler on Sunday.
I agree. Yeah. I thought he was a nice, efficient operator. I think that's the best way I could put it. Got the ball out nicely. Yeah. Had some good throws. Yeah. I think a lot of us are kind of like it was kind of like a thumbs up. Like, good job, Rattler. Yeah. Go do it again. Let's see what else you got. All right. Now on to the meaty portion of Football 301 preview shows. It's time to get lost in the sauce. This is where we deep dive on our three favorite games of the week. We're going to start maybe a game that maybe a couple of weeks ago wouldn't have maybe ID'd. Maybe I just would have, but maybe not all of us would be like, yeah, let's talk about that one. This is Seahawks at Steelers. Steelers are 3-point favorites. This is a morning game, or morning on the West in Mountain Time.
we don't do that over here on God's time.
Yeah, I know. It's 1 o'clock for you. Now I hate it. I hate 1 o'clock. I grew up on noon starts, so that's kind of like what's ingrained in my brain. But when I was with at Pitt or with the Falcons and stuff, I was like, oh, this 1 o'clock start time is not my favorite. I like my little 9 a.m. Big Ten kickoffs. But this is an interesting game. Steelers took the game from the Jets, were a very entertaining back and forth affair. The Seahawks, we just mentioned them, they played the 49ers, had a close one, really good defensive performance. And I actually thought the offense played fine. Maybe we want to see them take a next step. But let's start when the Seahawks have the ball, Charles. What are you focused on this game? Because the Steelers defense wasn't as tenacious as I was maybe expecting in week one. So feel kind of the same? I mean,
they were terrible. I don't think it's tenacious.
They're awful. I was being nice. Not as tenacious. Yeah, I know. Justin Fields had a great
64%
day.
64% drop back success rate. Like, you got killed, bro. Like, that's... and we've been excited about Justin Fields, but like, that's Justin Fields. He shouldn't be getting 64% drop back success rate against you. So I think if you're Seattle and looking at last week, what happened with the Steelers, like, you should be looking at this like, hey, maybe this could be like the first breakout performance like for our offense, just because of how much they struggled. Seattle last week, they ranked ninth in success rate for the week among all offenses against, what was the 31st ranked defense in terms of success rate last week, with 53.1% against the Jets offense last week for the Steelers. So if you want to be a team that runs the ball, the Jets, they kind of gave you a formula for it, even if Sam Darnold isn't the same level of athlete as Justin Fields. Like, there's obviously room for them to gash them. And I think what was a little bit surprising for me with the Steelers defense against the Jets was how soft they were up front. Like, they got mashed a lot of times. I thought Caleb Benn did not have a good game. Cameron Hayward looking a little old. TJ Watt was chasing the cheese on everything, bro, and just letting Justin Fields get out the pocket. So, if you play like that undisciplined, it doesn't have to be a zone read style offense like that. Like, if you're that undisciplined, any offense can get you any week. So I think this could be a big breakout game for the Seahawks, on offense, just because I think the Steelers defense looks really slow. And I think where Matt Harmon, our fellow co-host, was saying this summer, where, hey, Steelers defense, they're pretty old, like, this is a defense that's got guys that's long in the tooth, and we'll see what happens. And week one was not good. So I think if you're Seattle, you just probably just want to mash the ball and see what happens and build your play action stuff on top of it.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that kind of game. But no, that's a great point. It's about being long in the tooth. And the young players, which is like their linebackers, they're just like going the wrong way. Like, they're both really fast, but they like played slow, it felt like, last week, which is, that means they're thinking. If a guy runs a freaking 4.5 and looks like he's running a 4.9, that means he's thinking too much. But what you said is, like, I think the I think the Seahawks match up perfectly against this Jets or the Steelers defense, which was not, you know, maybe what I thought. I thought it'd be maybe a, you know, overmatched Seahawks front, but this is what the Clint Kubiak Shanahan offense, where you have this kind of raised floor with the zone runs. So like the Steelers ran, let the Jets run all over them. And I was expecting it to be all like gun runs, gun runs, gun runs, which there were some, but then they were just going under center, outside zone, under center, inside zone. And last week I looked this up on FTN because they actually have run concepts you can sort through. There's a little noise with their power ones. They include pin pull there, but that's just for me to get annoyed at. But anyways, but zone runs are accurate. 31 attempts last week against the Steelers defense, just on zone runs, 139 yards, 4.5 yards per carry and a touchdown. It was the most zone runs of the week. 23 was the next high. No one else was like over 17, 45% success rate. And we know what Kubiak's all about. Zone, zone, zone. And they look, I thought the Seahawks O-line looked good running. Like the running the ball was good statistically and eye test. The right guard's a little iffy. But everybody else in the run game looked really good. Gray Zabel looks like he might be like a rookie Pro Bowler. Like he looks so good.
Yes, he's awesome.
And he's great. I was actually like going through and like, okay, waiting for him. He didn't really have a negative play. Like he had, you know, neutral plays, but like, I don't know. I didn't see any real negatives with him. Yeah. Pass protection, they're a little leaky in some areas, but that's not what this team's built to do. They're trying to go zone run, boot, play action. Not a ton of play action last week, but zone runs, 5.1 yards per carry last week on zone runs, 55% success rate. I mean, you said like they got the formula and they could just do it.
I didn't look this up. I meant to look this up. I forgot, but it felt like play action was kind of down like league wide week one. I don't know. It just felt like teams weren't running out. Cause I know like the Falcons, they didn't run it like barely at all in their game against Tampa Bay. Didn't seem like Tampa Bay was even running it at all. Right. So I found that to be a little interesting that teams weren't running it that much week one, but maybe
we'll see how it goes. I've noticed the same thing, Charles McDonald. Yeah. And some of that's I meant to tweet this, but like the Rams, I would go nuts about the Rams doing the under center dropback stuff and with no play action, which more teams are doing. Caleb Williams had an under center quick game three-step drop, and he went one through five on the read, and then it was incomplete because he was throwing it away. But it was just one of those where I was like, I got pretty excited watching Caleb Williams do an under center quick game, one, two, three. It's rare. It's rare these days, but we're seeing more and more of it. That's a great observation. But that's the Seahawks didn't run a lot of play action. I was actually surprised by that too. Yeah. And I think this is a good week for you. You just mentioned TJ Watt taking the cheese. That's what bootlegs do. You're taking advantage of a DN crashing down hard. You're also risking unblocked TJ Watt. If he reads it right, he's killing the quarterback. So that's the risk of it. What do you think about the Seahawks passing game? It's very JSN heavy. It's basically, he's like, they only throw it to him and a little bit of Cooper Kupp and then like a smattering of other guys. But
did anyone catch more than one pass besides JSN? I don't think anyone had more than two or three. If it was like
Jason had 13 targets, Kupp had three, and I think everybody else had one or two.
Right. So yeah, that was
that's a follower right there.
Yeah, that did give me some alarm because that doesn't seem very sustainable. You know, we're going to give Jason. Yeah, you just need one other person to pop. I just don't think it's really feasible for Cooper Kupp to be that guy. I mean, he even just like. Just give me the tape. He's a tight end now, right? So if you're looking at just like the receptions this week, Jason had 9 for 124. Then Kenneth Walker was actually second in receptions with 3 for 4 yards. And there's Cooper Kupp with 2 for 15 and Elijah Arroyo and AJ Barner each had one apiece. Someone else has got to step up there. That's going to be really, really difficult to do for 17 games. It'd be a lot of fun if you're a Jason fantasy owner. You know, if you're going to get 13 to 17 targets a game, depending on what the volume is that week.
That's it.
Yeah, for him to get he got 13 targets on 23 dropbacks. That's insane. so hopefully they can find someone else because. over 50%. It's a little limited. It's a little limited. I think the concerns that you saw, we talked about with, you know, JSN and Kupp like on the field at the same time, but you kind of saw that game one because Cooper can't really do much of anything right now. And that was more like a, you know, the hype around that was more just like, oh, here's a name that you heard before. They've been the NFC West that's kind of tormenting your team for a few years, but it's not the Cooper Kupp of old. So, yeah, hopefully if they can get one of these like guys that's got a little bit more speed on the outside going as the season progresses, but I'm sure that they know that and they're looking at this and saying, all right, that wasn't probably the best start for our passing game, but certainly not end all be all. I thought Sam Darnold played all right for what he was given. JSN had a nice game, but you know, still need some more guys to contribute in the passing game. And that'll even just open more things up for the running game. And this is a good week to get that off because, wow, Pittsburgh, that was bad week one.
You get it. I know. Torrey Horton, he's got some vertical speed. I was curious because Slay is very gettable. And so I maybe see a little double move with Torrey Horton or something of that sort. That, yeah, but I agree. Someone else has to get more than two catches in this offense. It's just a little I love JSN. He's playing great. Yeah, but they know what Kupp is right now. They're basically using him as a tight end. Other side of the ball. What do you think about the Aaron Rodgers experience? And what do you think about the Seahawks defense? There might be top defense, I think, this year.
Yeah. They were you know, it's funny because like their overall like EPA stats weren't like super great, but just like watching them play, I was like, oh no, this is still one of the best defenses in the league. Like the way that they were able to punch the 49ers in the mouth really throughout the game. I mean, the 49ers were held to 36 rushes, 119 yards, 3.3 yards per carry with a long of 13. So when you're doing that, that's a good job of keeping things in front of you. And honestly, man, I kind of thought I thought Brock Purdy played a pretty decent game. I thought the touchdown like in the corner towards the end was a little fluky, but you know,
a little fluky. Yeah. It's so funny because the plays that he gets praised on aren't even the best plays. These other little plays in between are his best plays, which I think is always funny about Purdy.
Yeah. Those are the plays that make me say, you know, some quarterbacks are just touched by God, you know, and they get to live a little bit of a charmed life. But I thought, you know, against San Francisco's offense, I thought they did a pretty good job for the most part, except, you know, you kind of get unlucky there at the end. So I wouldn't even really be concerned about. I think they rank like 20th or 21st in EPA per play or success rate this week. Not really a big deal. I think when you go back and watch the tape, you don't really have too many concerns that this is going to be like a leaky unit or anything. Just, you know, you just didn't win game one and you got kind of unlucky there at the end of the game. But I still thought they did a really nice job of, you know, keeping like non-Ricky Pearsall stuff like in front of them because he was able to get loose a couple times for some big gashers. And that's probably what he's going to be doing all year. Like he looks pretty good, but still. Yeah. Seattle's defense, like you should be holding on this. Like this is still a really, really good unit. Their front seven is, you know, absolutely monstrous against the run. And I think like, you know, as the season goes along, they'll figure out like how they want to better utilize their personnel. But still, this is a really good defense, I think, that honestly should give Pittsburgh some problems up front, you know?
Yeah.
They're better. They're more talented. Yeah, they got size. They're better than the Jets are to me in terms of like totality. So I think that this isn't going to be quite as easy for Aaron Rodgers where he's dropping back and throwing for four touchdowns and DK Metcalf is running wide open. So I think that they have a better – I think they have a statistical performance that matches more of their overall quality to me this week.
Yeah, like this one actually gives you the actual stuff that fills the box scores. No, I agree. I think they match up well. A lot of what the – God, it's so hard with Rodgers because I always want to say Jets, and then they played the Jets, but it's the Steelers when watching that game. Is, you know, he had the underneath stuff to DK, and DK made some guys miss. I think the Seahawks are a really good tackling team, so I think that's not going to be as easy. The Jets are, you know, under Aaron Glenn, they can be pretty simplistic as far as coverages, you know, quarters and man. And so that's pretty easy for a vet quarterback to find some decent answers. You're going against the Seahawks, who that's Mike McDonald's thing. He runs everything under the sun. And now it's year two. So you're seeing these kind of new layers they're throwing in, some rotation stuff. I thought the front for the Seahawks, just like everybody had moments. Like Leonard Williams looked like second, like we know how last year, the second half, he looked like defensive player of the year, Leonard Williams. That's how he looked in week one, like actually dominant. DeMarcus Lawrence looked great. Byron Murphy had some nice plays. Jerron Reed had some plays. And then Bowie Mafi is like a terror right now. Like he got Trent Williams a couple times, had a bunch of pressures. He's looking very, very good as an edge rusher. And Mike McDonald brings the simulated pressures with the best of them. Like, and that's what I think can get Rodgers. I mean, if you remember last year when they played, he got him when he was with the Jets, where they dropped somebody in the coverage, dropped somebody into the hot throwing lanes, only bring four. Zach Frazier is a very good center, can help sort that out. But, you know, Rodgers kind of likes his traditional answer. So I'm curious if McDonald kind of throws a little something at him. But I think this is going to be a fist fight on that side of the ball because Stewart's going to run the ball too. Like, that's the other thing. Hopefully they play Caleb Johnson so I can see a little bit of that, please.
Same. Like, put him in the game, please. Just put him in the game.
Just four touches. That's it.
How bad could it be?
Just, I want to see him. I know. It's like, I get it. Rodgers is all, he gets whiny about pass protection, and then his vet running back actually has botches in protection. So it's like, great job.
I have to come forward and say I am someone who took Caleb Johnson in the first round of a dynasty draft this year. So we could get more than one carry. That would be great. That would be great.
That matters to you, dang it. All right, yeah. Final prediction for this game. Steelers are 3-point favorites at home.
I think the Seahawks win. Yeah, I was about to say win and cover, but obviously you're underdogs and you win, you cover. So, yeah, I think the Seahawks win this one. And I think the defense kind of boxes in Pittsburgh's offense. And if I'm wrong, then we'll see. But I think this is just really a really good matchup for Seattle's defense.
Yeah, I think I'm with Seahawks as well. I think they went outright. It's just a good matchup for them. I think it's a rock fight, and I think they're equipped for this rock fight. Like, even their offense isn't going to have a high ceiling this year, but where they're at floor-wise is like a perfect matchup for this defense. So I think they're going to have a nice day. We are going to take our first break, and then we'll come back with a few more Lost in the Sauce games. All right, we are back. And now it's for a Super Bowl rematch. Eagles at Chiefs. Chiefs are 1.5-point underdogs at Arrowhead. Not many times you're going to say that in your life when Patrick Mahomes is starting quarterback, which brings you to your point, to your underlying point, no matter what, whatever you talk about the Chiefs and a certain quarterback and his ratedness. This is an afternoon game, or a late afternoon game, I should say, 1:25 Pacific time. Producer Stone's also a West Coast guy, so of course he puts in the time zone for me. I appreciate that. But let's start with the Eagles have the ball. Of course, they beat the Cowboys last week, Thursday Night Football. I weird game to rewatch where it's an Eagles rewatch where it's frustrating and good all at the same time. Going against the Chiefs defense, that's frustrating and can be good at the same time. So what do you think about this side of the ball, Charles? I just want to get your first thoughts on these two units, because they're confusing to me.
Are we sure the Chiefs defense is still good though? That's where I'm at right now. Because it's been a while since they played some good defense, honestly. Like, even dating back to last year, you're kind of getting back to like mid-season last year is the last time they were like kind of looking at a good unit. And last week against a Chargers offense that was pretty bad outside of Justin Herbert last year. Like, outside the Justin Herbert, Ladd McConkey connection, they didn't really have much going on. And maybe a couple of J.K. Dobbins explosives. But with how they want to play and the personnel they had, it ended up being a pretty tough year. And last week, they came out and kind of shredded the Chiefs defense. Like, yeah, it was one of the worst defensive performances of the week. Basically a 50% success rate against an offense that was really limited. Last year, Justin Herbert was absolutely killing them. Quentin Johnson had some really nice plays against against their defense last week. I know Amari Hampton didn't have like the gaudy box score at the end of the game, but he had some really nice runs where he was able to power through guys. So it just kind of feels like I'm not really sure what like the full problem here is. Maybe you're just kind of seeing like attrition, and they haven't been able to replace like all the guys that have been good for them in the past. And that was kind of a rough week one. And even when you just look at some of the guys in the back seven, because this is kind of where stuff gets funny to me, where you start looking back at like narratives and things that you said yourself, where you look back in the Super Bowl when they beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl the first time they played, and you look back, you're like, man, you know, those young DBs for the Chiefs, like, they were able to hang tough, and maybe this is the growing experience. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you look back a few years later, like, these are still like a bunch of fourth, fifth, sixth round guys starting.
They're day three for a reason.
Right. Day three for a reason. You kind of just got by the skin of your teeth in that game. But now I just think that the talent level on this defense has kind of dropped to a point where it doesn't really feel like they feel like they're top heavy. Right. You got a couple stars that are really trying to hold together everything for the rest of the unit. And that's not really sustainable. I think this is kind of a nightmare matchup for them for after what they showed last week. I don't know. I don't think it's going to get like as bad as the Super Bowl, just because it's hard for NFL games, even like the best team against the worst team, to end in games that are that lopsided. But I still kind of expect them to get bulldozed up front. And I don't know what answer they have for the Eagles wide receivers, if that's an avenue that they try to, to go after, where, you know, they decide to throw it a little more because you've got Jalen Watson and Christian Fulton on AJ Brown and Devonta Smith. You know, that's a big, big talent advantage for the Eagles. So I think this is going to be another tough one for the Chiefs defense. It's not that like Spags has lost it or anything, or that like Chris Jones is bad now. It's just, I think there's so many pieces that have been lost over the years and they've had trouble kind of rebounding. I mean, there was a point where like they thought maybe they had an answer for LeJarius Sneed being gone on this roster. They don't. Right. So right. They don't really have a whole ton of depth up front. They got a couple guys up front that are nice with Chris Jones and Carl Laffis, but the actual depth holding it together, I think it's gotten pretty weak for them. And they showed last week.
Yeah. What you kind of say was like those DBs. It's like, who are the young, interesting players? Okay. We got Trent McDuffie, who's a star, but that's the thing, is they don't know where to line them up, because no matter where they don't line them up, gets attacked. If they don't put him in a slot, like they put him on the outside, he played really well on the outside last year and this year. In the slot, they were 32nd in success rate allowed on slot targets last year. Jalen Hurts doesn't really target the slot. He targets outside and targets his tight end, Dallas Goedert mostly. But still, it is a thing that it's just a weakness, because Chimari Connor has just got a big target on him. He just got decimated in the slot. I know some of the blitzing stuff kind of catches him and he has to recover in that. And he's really good against the run. And that's the other thing. The Chiefs are good against the run, but when you go against the Eagles, that's why it's so hard to go against them. It's like, all right, do you have two outside corners that can win against AJ Brown, Devonta Smith time after time? Probably not. Not a lot of defenses are built that way. So it's like what you were kind of getting at. It's like, there's just a couple guys. Like Chris Jones was dominant last week, and against the run, mm-hmm. He was in the backfield over and over. You're talking about Hampton not having a great day, and it's like Jones was like a one-man team. But right. It's just a very specific defense. Like Spags, this defense will get better over the season. Like Spags always layers it after the bye week. They always take a bump. But that's the thing is, all right, who's taking your bump? Like, I'm not like going like, well, I want to see this guy get playing time. I'm trying to figure it out too when I look at him. And I'm like, the McDuffie conundrum is interesting to me. Like, because wherever he doesn't line up, is just a glaring weakness on his defense.
Right.
I think that's so funny, like robbing Peter to pay Paul on your defense. Like, yeah. And then I also think, you know, we got that new OC and play caller in Philly. AJ Brown didn't get a lot of targets last week. I think that was a big storyline. Anyone paying attention? Yeah. Who do you think is going to get a lot of targets this week? I think AJ Brown. Like, that's a usual classic new OC pressure. Oh, God, I got to get him going. Like, an owner starts saying something. I'm just thinking from the outside here, past experiences. But no, I think the Eagles have the advantage. I think the Eagles have an advantage here. As I do think the Chiefs will make it a slog in the run game. They can do that. They can make it really, you know, punch you in the mouth there. But the Eagles have weapons on the outside. So it's like, you got to create a turnover. It's almost like early Spags years with when he first got there in the Chiefs, like where it's just like, hey, they just got to create chaos. That's what they feel like right now. The other side of the ball, you got, you know, a Chiefs offense that's there right now.
Yeah.
Going against the Eagles. Yeah. And Eagles defense that was Jalen Carter-less last week. Has a big question mark at corner, I still think, with who they have out there right now. And just kind of, they got through that game. The Cowboys, I think, surprised them a little bit. And when you're without your best player, it's a little tough, especially against an offense that's jabbing you in the face over and over. Got a good linebacker play out of them. But what do you think of the Eagles defense actually in week one, and kind of where the kind of Chiefs stack up with them, Charles?
Ooh, I mean, man, not a good performance for the Eagles defense either. Like the Jalen Carter loss was huge, huge for them.
It was felt.
Obviously, because it was very much felt, because you know, I might be selling my stock in that Jordan Davis contract here if you're watching
I admit that seemed like such an easy one. It's like, no, I don't know about when.
I did feel better about my take that the Cowboys interior offensive line could be a big unit that helps them, you know, get through the season. But, you know, we're talking about if CeeDee Lamb didn't have a couple uncharacteristic drops, I don't know where that game ends or what the score is by the end of it, because some of those were in pretty crucial situation. So obviously, like, this defense, it without Jalen Carter, they can get pushed around a little bit, but that was still a little bit surprising to me, like how easy it was for them to get pushed around, just, you know, excuse me, by losing Jalen Carter. I know you lose some of the or not some of the, a lot of the depth that you had last year, but I thought maybe they'd be a little bit more stout in their first game, even you know, with Jalen missing time. So there's still like opportunity for the Chiefs here to have a day where they can move the ball. I mean, even last week, as sloppy as it looked at times, they still averaged, you know, 2.63 points per drive, which is, you know, still going to be, it was top 10 for last week, still going to make you one of the better offenses in the league. They were still a top 10 EPA. I think where it shifted, their success rate was way down from last year in week one. Yeah. They had a 37% success rate compared to where they were ranking top 10 for the most part of last season. But, you know, it's funny because I still don't think like this is a great offense around Mahomes, but he's so good. And even with some of the throws that he missed last week, they're still like he took over the game like with his scrambling and was running guys over. Yep. And making guys miss in the open field and picking up key first downs. So he can still actually absolutely be a generator of offense. But I think that, you know, it won't be quite as tough sledding as it was in the Super Bowl because they're missing a bunch of defensive line depth that was in that game. And I think if you're looking at an angle of optimism, like for the Chiefs offense this week, it's that plus, like you said, you're still looking for another cornerback across from Quinion Mitchell for the full time. And that's something that Patrick Mahomes can exploit, whether his receiver is great or whether it's not. So I still think there's an avenue for them to win. It's just kind of like, can the defense get Mahomes one last drive, you know, where he has a chance to kind of win it at the end? If they can just hang in there long enough, I think they have a chance, because I think the offense is better equipped to go against this Eagles defense in the current form. But I just get so worried on the other side that maybe won't be able to keep up with what the Eagles offense is able to put out.
Yeah, that it's just like you can't make mistakes. And that's so hard to play.
Right.
When you know, you got, you know, and Xavier Worthy, he practiced, but, you know, he's banged up. It's just kind of like, okay, can Jalen Royals not playing yet? So it's like, where's the juice coming on this offense? You know, the run game is just blah. Like, I mean, Pacheco's not good. And Kareem Hunt's Kareem Hunt. He's old Kareem Hunt. And there's an opportunity that you can maybe run up the middle on this team. But I think the Eagles have such an advantage with their outside rushers against these tackles. Even if Simmons played okay in week one, he's still a rookie. And you just look at the guys that they could throw at him. Like, I mean, Josh Uche's was like unblockable at times, and that's what he can do. You can run on Josh Uche. That's why he's available as a DPR. But if you don't have talent at tackle or a guy that can keep up, Juwan Taylor can get got. You know, a rookie is a rookie, even if Simmons has been impressive. So it's just, right, you know, they always find answers. They always figure it out, and Mahomes is the best. And so, like, is it just targeting Adoree Jackson over and over and over? Is it trying to get Jahad Campbell on a play action concept, you know, where he's coming up and you catch him over the top? It's one of those things where it's like, I don't think they're totally out. Like, they always find answers, and Mahomes is Mahomes, but it's just like, man, it's just one thing after another with this team where it's just like, they make it really hard. Like, they like playing on heroic or legendary mode. And every time, everything they do, and they do it from Mahomes, man. Before we get to prediction, I should have mentioned also Landon Dickerson did not practice. He's still banged up with a back. That's another thing. Chris Jones actually might have an advantage. It's Tyler Steen, who's fine. But then Landon Dickerson banged up. But the Eagles are losing depth. Like, that's an underrated thing. Look at all the signings they made in camp and trades, I think, as well, for tackles. Like, they're trying to get more bodies. They cut Kenyon Green. So, like, all right, well, we're already on our depth, that our project at one at right guard. And then now Dickerson's banged up with a back and a meniscus. And he's been banged up all his career. I mean, he's been playing through it. But I don't know. Chris Jones on the interior, he winds up, he kind of picks who they think the fish is. So I'm curious too if Chris Jones could kind of take over one of those guys. That came out wrong. All right, but predictions.
what's the spread here again?
Eagles are 1.5-point favorites on the road at Arrowhead.
Yeah, I think they win. I think they just have a little bit too much for the Chiefs defense. And even if Chris Jones can win like some individual matchups, I still think the totality of both units is a little bit too much for Kansas City.
That, I know that kind of one of my theories on especially the NFL is who needs a win. And it kind of feels like the Chiefs need this, but maybe 0-2 might put a little more fire up right. them. And maybe feel a little bit better. Like, I'm not out on the Chiefs. I don't want to be sound so negative. Like, they always figure out some way to patch together on defense or be good sometimes. And then it's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And like, they have talent on the O-line. Like, they're going to figure out some things to make this talent, like all the talent they have, they're going to make it figure. It's not going to be perfect, but they'll make it work. But they're playing the Eagles, and that's just a tough ask.
It's kind of crazy to say this about a team that was just in the Super Bowl, but they are kind of like retooling, you know, like rebuilding ish to a degree. Now, I do think that there should be some heat on what is going on in the front office, because you've missed on a whole bunch of picks over the past couple years that has thinned out the depth on this team. But, you know, just because they were in the Super Bowl and got Patrick Mahomes doesn't mean they aren't retooling to a degree. And honestly, Chargers Eagles, that's a tough way to start your season when you're worried about some of the depth that you have. So,
I'm going to go with the Eagles, even though my heart's telling me like Mahomes at home is an underdog is so crazy to me. But my head's still saying Eagles just because of the talent. Even if I think the Eagles are reworking some things, you know, on defense, it seems like, you know, trying to get this new personnel in. You know, they acquired some guys. They got Za'Darius Smith now, right? Yeah, Za'Darius Smith, they got going now. Like, they'll figure out that those guys. And there's some weaknesses. I think you can get after them in some ways. I think you can run on the outside on this Eagles team. That's like one aspect. But all right, and I can attack CB2. Like, okay, but that's not like a ton of things I'm pulling at here to have success, right, especially if Jalen Carter's playing. So going with the Eagles here. But prove me wrong, Chiefs. That's really my statement. Prove me wrong in week two. Let's get to the next game. Very fun one. Another 1-0 team versus 0-1 team. An NFC-AFC tilt. We got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Houston playing the Texans. One of the Monday night games. The Texans are 2.5-point favorites, and this is our Haas fight of the week.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You know, a little gong show going. No, all right. Let's start with, you know, Tristan Wirfs. Actually, I think I saw something, and I wish I kind of wrote down who it saw or saved it, that like Tristan Wirfs, they're like pushing Tristan Wirfs to play, but I was like, I also thought he was on PUP, so maybe I'm misconstruing a rule or something like that. But anyways.
No. He was going to be on PUP before the season, and he was like just healthy enough to maybe play week one. So they didn't put him on PUP, and then he was out week one. So he can still play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually missed that. I thought he was still on PUP. So I was like, 4 weeks. I'll check in week five. Well, that's interesting to me. And I know they said that Godwin as well. But no, if we're just playing, wow. But we still have a pretty good Bucs O-line, even if it's Graham Barton playing left tackle and Ben Brendison playing center. Cody Mock keeps getting better at right guard. Right tackle, Luke Getteke, he's been paid now, but he's a good right tackle. Like, it's still a good O-line. They're going to run the ball, and this is a pretty fun offense going against that Texans defense that just lines it up and comes at you up front and on the back end. So when the Bucs have the ball, Charles, this Haas fight of the week, what's grabbing your attention? Any of the certain matchups, anything you want to see from either side?
I think that the Texans defense is better positioned than the Falcons defense to take advantage of a crappy Baker Mayfield day. Cause I did not think that Baker played well, like at all last week. There were a bunch of missed throws. He was very erratic in the pocket. I thought even very just skittish. Like, very skittish. Yeah. And it's not like the Falcons were getting a whole ton of pressure either. So against, I think I saw some that the Falcons were like, they were one of the only teams that have like a pressure rate more than 40% playing PFF. But I think a lot of that was Baker just bringing it on to himself.
Yeah.
Where you're just holding the ball too long, not really giving things a chance to get open down the field and then throwing some wild passes. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you're playing against a soft defense like that, you can still kind of trudge out a victory. And I thought even like some of the sequencing, like from the play calling perspective, I thought they were just a little too pass heavy in some spots, even though like their first down pass rate wasn't that high. I thought that they should have just mashed it and kept going along with the ground game and stuck with it a little bit harder than they did at times. But still, like you saw, even with a quarterback that was not playing well, an offensive coordinator still trying to get used to the reins, they were able to score, you know, enough points to get the win on the road. So I think that's like kind of encouraging, but also discouraging, because you're playing defense that's much more talented, much better constructed, faster, you know, than what you had last week. And I think that, like, if Baker plays the same game he played last week, I don't think they stand a chance at winning this game, because they'll just get pummeled. And even with the Texans offense looking pretty bad again on the other side, it just feels like that could get into turnover territory that's kind of hard to get out of. So I thought, you know, Tampa Bay, like, they look good. Like, Emeka Buka had a really strong game week one. Say bail Baker out of some spots where he was doing the skittish, like panicking stuff again. But overall, I was a little bit worried about how Baker played and just, you know, kind of the construction of their offense to move together. And I think that's going to tee up for like a tough week two matchup. But Yeah, this could be a pretty low scoring game, I think.
Yeah, I think every Texans game, man. It's just, I think it's like one of the safer bets you can make is the under in Texans games. No, I'm with you. I thought it was surprising, actually. I thought TV, when I watched that game on TV, you know, it was one of the multi-view boxes I had. It was kind of like indifferent on Baker's performance, other than, you know, I saw the touchdown throw and I was like, oh, yeah, hell of a throw. Guy almost got underneath it, though. But while watching all 22, I was much more down on him because you can just see what's popping open. There's times he's looking to scramble when it's like, just throw the swing. Like he looked like a young quarterback, not a guy that started 100 games. So it was just not what you want to see. But more of a testament to what the Bucs are. Like that's a bad Baker game and you still win on the road in a division. Like that's a testament to how good like this team is and what the infrastructure is. No, but I'm just curious too. It's like we mentioned the fronts. That's kind of the focus on Haas fights. But I mean, man coverage stuff is going to be interesting. Like, who's Stingley matching up with? Like, I think that's going to be really cool. Like, who they decide, like, is Ibuka worth it? Is it Evans? Or if Godwin's playing? But no, great shout out with Ibuka. I just think this Texans front, I know the Rams offensive line is not the greatest thing in the world, but it was one of those performances by Texans D-line where I was like, yep, that's exactly what I envisioned you guys being. Just absolute banshees. Just everything, just edginess everywhere, guys up the middle, like just no matter what, like somebody was winning somewhere, and usually it's multiple players. So I think this is gonna be a really, really fun battle. Hopefully worse plays now. That's like kind of a low-key thing I'm keeping my eye on now. The other side of the ball, what's interesting for you there? I'll start with mine because I think it's just pretty simple. It's CJ Stroud versus Todd Bowles, and Stroud now getting a little bit more control of the offense. I'm excited to watch that. I want to see if he maybe adjusts the protection and gets his guys straight. But do you think the Texans O-line can survive Todd Bowles? Would you reinforcements with Ed Ingram starting? Is that going to help you out?
To think this, what we thought about the Texans offense is exactly what they were week one. I thought one kind of funny thing from from their first game was they were they had the third lowest rate of percent of plays. That went from 0 negative yards in week one, but they were also 20th in yards per play. So every play, you're just 2-3 yards a time. We're barely just moving forward. Cloud of dust everywhere, fighting for our lives. Man. But even then, like the longer this goes on, it's weird because like the discussion around CJ Stroud last year, I felt like it's like, you know, has he regressed? And I feel like the more I watch this, the more respect I gain for his game. Cause dude, this is hard, man. This is difficult. Mm-hmm. Like the life that he's living. Mm-hmm. It's not like they have like a run game that you'll be able to count on. We know the offensive line is going to be great. You're putting in new faces at receiver, some of them rookies. And I think he still just like kind of stays steady in his performance through it, even though, you know, they weren't able to manage a whole bunch of points last week. It's kind of like a masterclass of like what a good quarterback and a truly like pretty bad offense looks like. And I don't think that even if they struggle and sputter out and are, you know, bottom 10 offense by success rate in EPA this year, I still don't think it says that much about where Stroud is. We know that when the ecosystem is a little bit more talented, he can be a quarterback that really lights up the stat sheet. And I think that even just having him gives him a chance to stay alive week to week. And yeah, Tampa Bay's defense, like I thought it was a mixed bag for them. Week one against Atlanta, they did a really good job shutting down the run game. But they still allowed some explosives like on the outside once guys got into space. Like, so maybe that's where you try to exploit it. But even then, you know, I'm looking at the Texans offense, there's no Bijan Robinson here that I can, you know, dump out onto a screen a few times a game or a swing pass and he's going to go make someone miss and explode down the field. Or even like Kyle Pitts had some nice moments against Tampa Bay last week where he was able to get loose and show someone off that athleticism. It doesn't seem like they have the speed, I guess, to threaten most defenses that they play. And I'm assuming that VeaVea is going to have another crazy performance where he just destroys every, you know, run that comes near him again, because the Texans offensive line isn't very good. And this just has like more rock fight potential. But I still think CJ Stroud could have a nice game because it's not like the Bucs corners on the outside the most, you know, most dominant unit ever. I know they re-signed Zion McCollum before the season started, but they didn't have their best game last week against Atlanta, even with some of the downfield inaccuracies that Michael Penix showed. There's still some talent on this defense, and I think they have more than enough talent to shut down Tampa Bay's, or excuse me, Houston's offense. So I think this is going to be another tough week for CJ Stroud, but you might get enough of your defense again where you got a chance to win at the end.
Yeah, my first note is, okay, obviously, every Texans game is the same thing. And I think why I keep bringing them up, like every show I've been on, including ours, is like they're so close to being a contender that I want them to figure out the O-line, because it's just like, if they figure this out, they have a lot of what you need. They have a defense. They have a pass rush. They can run man coverage with corners. They got Nico Collins. They got a true number one. I like their auxiliary guys, the young guys now. The backs are whatever. But like, if you have a good offensive line, Stroud and okay backs, you can make that work because you have true weapons. Right. But it's like the whole line. I mean, they're not going to get the ceiling is so capped that it's just like they just have to get to at least competency. You know, it reminds me of when my dad was coaching like the Bears O-lines, like where it was like terrible talent, where, you know, if Jamarcus Webb starting at left tackle, but it was like at least give yourself a shot where everybody's going the right direction and you can block it up and maybe get some explosives and gash them. But like Vita Vea versus Jake Andrews is a huge, huge, big mismatch. Kalijah Kancey against any of these interior guys, big mismatch. Yaya Diaby against either edge guy or either offensive tackle, he's turning into a star. He's an advantage, I think, no matter what. So it's just, and Hassan Reddick as well. Yeah. Like they have enough to like make this really tough on the Texans O-line. And then that's what's so funny was, and actually I mentioned this on Sunday when I really lit into the Texans O-line the last time I did it, but like bringing up all the pressure stuff, like Ed Ingram was out with something internal, abdominal or sickness or something. And so he misses, but that's what cracks me up is that Ed Ingram's the most important player on the Houston Texans roster because he goes out, Tyus Howard has to kick in, Ariante Ursary has to play right tackle, Cam Robinson's at left tackle. So an already shuffled unit's shuffled again. So it was like, that was just bad. But that's the thing. Having said all that, I rewatched the game and I'm just like you, I'm like, CJ Stroud, man, like he played great. It doesn't feel like that. I get that. When you look at box score stats and you look at the stats, sometimes you're like, oh, that's not that great. But that's what, you have to see what these guys are working with. And he's just time after time, he's fading away, making these great throws. Next time you watch CJ Stroud, just people listening, first notice that he throws like Warren Moon where everything's a perfect spiral every time. But the other thing is that to watch his nose stepping, like he can deliver the football without his feet moving at all as one of the best in the league. And it's really cool. It's a very unique type of way he does it. He's a dart thrower. Like he throws it like a dart. And it's, I've ever told you my dad's theory about that. About quarterbacks, he's always wanted to run a dart tournament with former quarterbacks because throwing a football is just like throwing a dart. And so that's like always been a little pet project. So if anyone has any ideas about that, hit me up because I've always thought that was a pretty fun idea. But it's the same. That's what Stroud can do though. He just throws it like a dart and it's all wrist power and forearm power and strong hands. So he gives them a chance. He's always going to give them a chance, even if everything else has fallen apart and they still have Nico Collins, which just helps out so much. All right. Final prediction though. Texans are favored by 2.5 points. Who are you going with?
I think they get the win. I just based off what I saw from Tampa Bay's offense last week, I'd be a little concerned about them against defenses with more talent. And I think they get just enough from the offense to pull them across. But again, this could be another like 14-9 game that Houston would probably be playing all season, you know?
Yeah. Oh man, this one is hard. I am going to go with the Texans. I'm going to stick with need to win kind of theory here. Even if it's an NFC team, doesn't hurt you too as badly. I don't know. This doesn't seem right. Them starting out 0-2. And I think they just have enough talent to do it. I think it's going to be a good game. Just like you say, a rock fight. It's going to be a fist fight. Like that's why it was our host fight of the week. All right. We are going to take our last break and then we're going to come back with a couple new segments, including Big Dog of the Week. See you guys in a sec. All right. We are back. The new segment introducing Big Dog of the Week. It's an underdog that we just think has a real shot. And we're trying to find like real underdogs, like touchdown without the extra point. So like a touchdown or more. So this week, division battle. Want to talk about this game anyways. We got Bears at Lions. Lions are 6-point favorites as we record this show. It is another morning, early afternoon game played at Ford Field in Detroit. So how we're going to do this segment is, how does the underdog straight up win? How do they not only cover, but they win the game outright. So that is the Bears in this case on the road. Ben Johnson returning back to Detroit, who Lions fans seem to hate him now because he had the gall to take a head coaching job. But what do you think? What do you think, Charles, has to happen? What are the keys for the Bears to pull out this victory?
Like, that first quarter that they played against Minnesota was pretty good. Like, if you could just do that like three times, you should get out of here with a dub. But man, I really do think people are acting crazy about this Caleb Williams game one stuff. As if he just like sucks. Like, we watched him complete the first 10 passes of the game, some of the craziest passes that you saw all week one. He did multiple times in his first 10 drives, its first 10 plays. And like by the end of the game, everyone's like, "Oh, he can't play anymore." I was like, "What the hell happened here?" Like, obviously, it wasn't his best. It wasn't his best performance, and he would tell you that. But it's not like he was making a bunch of like terrible reads and like putting the ball in harm's way. He just missed some throws. He missed some throws. You know he can hit, and I would bank on him starting to hit more
against
of those
a top five defense.
Right. And honestly, when you see a game like that, it's just like almost like the law of averages. When you see a game like that where he starts off 10 for 10. And then as the game goes on, he misses like every single throw that he's trying to make. Well, it's going to be somewhere in between for the most of this, you know? And that's still pretty good. Cause even if you go back, like, on one of the first throws he had, he's like rolling out to his right and just fires like 100 miles per hour, like against the grain of his body. And it ends up perfectly. I was like, that's why you keep betting on it, because there's so few people on the planet that can do stuff like that. And I think he's going to be totally fine. And even this week against Detroit, there's still opportunity for him to have a good game. It's not like the Lions played their best defense, certainly last week against a Green Bay team that was really, you know, revving, ready to go. So yeah, I guess what you would need if you're the Bears to win this game is for Caleb Williams to have a strong performance, which is something I think he's perfectly capable of. So not concerned about the Bears offense. It's a long season, guys. It's week one, you know, right? So nothing that you saw last week should be weighing like too heavily on your mind, because if we cut that game at halftime, you would say, holy crap, Vikings made a horrible mistake picking J.J. McCarthy, and Caleb Williams might be a top five quarterback in football. But you played the second half, and now J.J. McCarthy is NFC offensive.
Yeah.
Right. He's NFC offensive player of the week, which is still a little silly, but goes to show, like, you got to let this stuff play out. I think the Bears have a real shot to win this week. I thought the defense played pretty well last week, all things considered, until the end of the game. And against the Lions offense that looked just discombobulated last week, There's really a chance that they could be on upset watch and lose this game against Chicago, I think.
Yeah, I rewatched it, and that was hard sometimes. It's like I trying to watch the entire game and watch it all back on film and be fair and actually like pay attention, take my notes and everything. And so finally watched back the whole game. And it was one of those, if you just ignored any noise, didn't watch that game live, and you just watched the tape, you're like, oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, he missed a couple throws, but actually, like, really, like, Caleb made really right decision on every play. There's two that off the top of my head where he like turned down like an underneath route and then he went to scramble. That's okay. Every quarterback does that. Every top five quarterback does that. It happens. It comes up. So I'm not going to like kill him all the way. He misses the late throw to DJ Moore. Ryan Fitzpatrick thinks that was supposed to be a corner route. I get why he said that, because it was the other side of the concept was a high low, just like that side. Maybe DJ Moore just, I don't know. It was funky. I'm not trying to just like give excuses, just trying to explain this out. But I watched it back and I was like, man, I thought he made great decisions. He was getting to checkdowns. His scrambling, there's a little bit of a narrative disconnect with his play extending, is that like what I think where people see him run around, they're like, oh, there he goes, turning down throws, running around again. And then you watch back on film, it's like he's running because there's a guy running right at him. Someone broke free, like Drew Dahlman missed a block or Jonah Jackson missed a block, and they're running right at him. And he made like, I tweeted this, 75% of the quarterbacks in the league, that would have been five or more sacks. And he took two, and one of them was a Hargrave insta-win and just gets him. And he made three of those miss off the top of my head. I would even say four. And then another one was his toes were out of bounds when he broke contain again. And then he wicked the throw, and then his toes were out of bounds. So it wasn't a true sack with him getting hit. So one sack on that many pressures, that's improvement. This is the guy that got sacked a ton last year. So I thought that was a great improvement. I thought he had some downfield throws that were great. He had a deep dig to DJ Moore. And I don't think people realize it was a dig because DJ Moore gets collided. It was kind of a cover two variation, but I'm still trying to figure out exactly what it was. It was cover six, at least, I think. But cover two, anyways. Cover two, deep half safety, corner in the flat. The corner is his rules are he's going to collide the outside corner or outside receiver, make him go outside, receiver release outside. DJ Moore takes this long, winding path. So Caleb has to hitch a couple times. What's really cool, though, is Caleb was shortcutting the read. He got to the proper read, which is the deep dig against cover two. But DJ Moore took so long, it looks like he's hitching a couple extra times because he's just waiting for him to get there. And he throws it. DJ Moore turns and it hits him. So it doesn't even look like a dig. It almost looks like a deep curl. And that was, I was like, that's great. That's advanced. I mean, reading a Brian Flores defense like that where you're shortcutting, I was like, that's really good. And it's just one of those subtle things that you have to rewatch. I thought he was in control. They're trying to really work the cadence. That's why they had all those false starts. They were really trying to change it up. They got Hargrave once later, but that's why all those false starts were happening. But I don't know. I came away from it way more positive overall of all of it. Again, he had a couple misses, but man, he had a lot of great plays and sack avoidance. And I just did not think he made any mental mistakes, truly. Like, he missed a couple where he just passed over a guy. But as far as putting the ball in harm's way, I don't think he ever did that all night. That's why you got to watch the film. I think also, we just focus a lot on the Bears. DeAndre Swift, they need to find somebody else to run the ball. Dalton's got to earn his money. Jonah Jackson's got to earn his money. They're kind of up and down. They'll get better as the season goes along. And I thought they did some cool things with the tight ends. They got them vertical, Loveland and Komet. They're doing some cool vertical things. So it was I'm a lot more optimistic about what I saw than how my first feelings were after Monday night. The Lions, though, I was curious about your thoughts with them. Anything on rewatch this Lions? Let's start with the Lions defense, because I thought they had some botches, and that's a little scary to me in week one with a defense returning a decent amount of guys. So I was curious what you thought about them.
I think that's kind of like the tale for both sides of the ball. Probably a little bit more alarming for the Lions defense, because at least with the Lions offense, you can say, we're replacing starters on the offensive line. A bunch of young guys are playing. So yeah, like when there's a twist or something, maybe we don't pick that up. But defense, like a lot of these guys are returning. You promoted a linebackers coach, Kelvin Shepard, to DC. So, like, theoretically, a lot of this should be the same, but they obviously were, they were way out of sorts, I think, week one. And maybe it's just, hey, it's week one, and we played a really good offense that had a lot of continuity, but it also should be a pretty talented defense that had a lot of continuity in it. They just didn't have the game, I think, that they were looking for coming out of it. Now, I guess I kind of get stuck on like how much of that is just like the Packers offense being awesome versus how much of it is the Lions defense not being great. And we'll probably get a more clear answer on that this week. But also, like, if you're the Bears offense and you're watching film of that Lions Packers game week one, you should probably still be looking at like, hey, there's room for us to kind of maybe get them out of sorts and get chunks of plays at a time. If we can, if we can block and not have Caleb like running some of these scramble drills, There's room for them, I think, for them to have a pretty strong game this week. So I'm still tentatively excited about this Bears offense, even with how they ended that game last week or on Monday.
The Lions, it's just both sides of the ball. It's just like, I know it's new coordinators, but that was the whole point, was that, like you said, Shepard gets promoted, and then John Morton on offense is supposed to be part of the system, part of this tree. So it should be a smoothish transition because we have so much personnel returning. Just didn't feel like that. I've kind of brought this up in a few shows, but including with Matt, where it was just like a lack of design thoughtfulness was really concerning on offense, where the first play of the entire season, you're running behind Sam Laporta at Lucas Van Ness. And I'm like, you had all offseason. That's your first play is an obvious mismatch. And that, I don't know. And all of a sudden John Morton comes out today and he's saying, well, I got to take some more off my players' plates. And it's like, are you already saying that after week one in an offensive system you guys are supposed to be returning? That's what it's supposed to be. You guys, like, it's supposed to be ready-made. Like, just call the plays. Call the good plays. That's what you're supposed to be doing. I say that, like, jokingly, but it just felt like it was just a lack of flow. I mentioned that the stat that they had the lowest explosive rate since 2022. They had their second-worst success rate in the run game of the Dan Campbell era. their worst run game as far as success rate goes, which I think is a very important stat with the run game. It was their worst since week 16 in 2022. 22.7% was the third worst in the entire NFL. What, do I think the Packers defense is good? Yeah. But the Lions are kind of one of those teams where it's like, well, you should, it's like the Eagles. Well, you should be able to at least be pretty good on the ground every game, like where you're getting at least above 35%. So I know it's a new interior trio or a reworked interior trio, but you know, the Bears got some dudes too. And so, yeah, I actually think the Bears match up decently against them. I'm very curious to see what kind of like, all right, the Lions got, they ran to that buzzsaw at Lambeau Field. Okay, what is, what, how do you guys come back? How do you guys answer back? Because of course, both of these teams do need a win desperately, but I think this will be a fun game. I'm pretty excited about it. All right. I don't think we have to do a prediction. That's why we did underdog. Do you think the Bears can hold off? I do. Do you?
I think they can. It's going to be tough, but I think that they can.
Yeah. At Ford Field's tough, you know, and Lions still have a lot of talent. And that's why I think their floor is still pretty high. It's just, all right, I'm gonna be focusing on that game very, very keenly when I watch film. And just sorry, if I better not see any palms up from the Lions defense on the third play of the season on who has who in man coverage. Like, that is what's concerning. It's the easiest stuff they're botching, and that's, whew, and everybody's rushing straight. There's no twists in games. Yeah. Okay. So I'll just wait until I see, and they're going to probably blow the Bears out. But all right, we're going to wrap this up with another new segment. It's time for some Hail Marys. Way to go. Hail Marys. So originally it was picks, and we're going to just turn this into a bold prediction that we throw up a prayer on, and we just see how it lands. See if we come down with it, and then we're going to just talk about games. It could be games that we talked about before. We were 0-1 last week on the pre-named stuff before Hail Marys, but it's Hail Marys now, so we're starting fresh. You said no Sauce interception, or a Sauce interception. Sauce Gardner did not come up with one. I said Mahomes was not going to get sacked. He got sacked twice, but we move on. It's week two. So Charles, what is your Hail Mary of week two?
My Hail Mary of week two is I think the Jaguars will beat the Bengals this weekend. I thought the Bengals are 2.5-point favorite. But I thought they looked terrible last week against Cleveland. It's like, you know, Joe Flacco, I thought he played a better game than Joe Burrow did, honestly.
He had some great throws. The Browns were like actually kind of fun to watch.
They were. Which is really, I think, alarming if you're a fan of the Bengals, because that, just because they're fun to watch doesn't mean that's suddenly a good offense. Now, I still think that's probably one of the worst offenses in the league. And Joe Flacco had, I think, a 47% success rate against that defense, which is, hey man, and he finished with positive EPA on the day, which is higher than what Joe Burrow had in both marks. I think Joe Burrow had rather like a 37% success rate against the Browns defense and finished with less than 100 net passing yards. That's a bad, bad start if you're the Bengals fan. And they couldn't run the ball at all either. Like, the offensive line got punked in the run game all game long, and the defense was just about as soft as we thought it was going to be, but they were able to kind of eke out the win at the end there. So I think Jacksonville's a lot better team than Cleveland is, even with playing the, you know, pathetic Panthers last week and Bryce Young, and the offense was awful. I still think they showed maybe a little bit more cohesiveness as a unit than they did last year. You know, once Doug Peterson decided, I don't really feel like doing this anymore. You know, so I think
I think Jacksonville I could get to.
Yeah, I think Jacksonville can actually beat Cincinnati. I think they just look like maybe a little bit of a better team, or I don't know if I'm overreacting to how awful the Bengals look week one.
I don't think you're overreacting. I don't trust the defense at all. Like, I don't think that's going to, like, it's just my, like, the Texans offensive line. They only can get so much better, even with good coaching and everything. I previewed the show with Mina, and she was like, what's your key to the game? I go, just competency from any of the four units. Jags O, Jags D, Bengals O, Bengals D. Just competency. That's the goal of this game. It's what I'm keeping my eye on. I like this one a lot. I'm really curious to see what the next step is with the Jags. How they use Travis Hunter is always interesting with them. See if Trevor Lawrence can actually have a B+ or better game, a consistent four-quarter game. See if, you know, Burrow and them bounce back. Very, very fun game. Also, a game a couple years ago that made the Jaguars season go in the tank. Remember when it was like they were like 8-2 or 8-3, And then they had a lead against the Bengals, and they lost it. I think I remember that right.
Yeah, because that was the Burrow missed that game. I think like Brandon Allen or
it was a Jake Browning game, right?
Jake Browning game. Yeah, he was in. And they blew that game. Yeah,
I thought so. Memories. My Hail Mary for week two: the Vikings will rush for over 150 yards and win against your Falcons, right? Against your Falcons. Jordan Mason's over under is currently at 60.5, and this is more a bet on Vikings run games. Really was cooking in the second half. Looked good, looked how I thought it was going to look. Donovan Jackson looks like a hit already. Ryan Kelly I thought had a nice game. But the left tackle, Justin School, that is the worst offensive player, offensive player in the entire NFL. He's the guy that jump-started Aiden Hutchinson's defense player of the year.
He was
playing right tackle. He's not. Christian Darrisaw's got to come back. But this team is going to be a team that runs the ball and uses J.J. McCarthy situational to throw the ball. Kevin O'Connell, since he's been the head coach, he's only cracked 150 yards three times as a team. Week 11, 2023, week 8, 2022, and week 10, 2024. Their record under O'Connell is 175 yards. I think they're going to have a nice day on the ground. I think the Falcons did play feisty last week. I give them the props. I thought they played a nice game on defense, but I think the Vikings are be feeling good and have a nice answer for them. So going with 150 yards and win. All right. That's the Hail Marys for week two. We're closing it out today, Charles. You and I will be back Sunday night live right before Sunday night football. We get that little time between that, the late games and then the night game right there. There's that little window for Football 301 Live. We'll be reacting to week two. So come hang out. It's a lot of fun. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. That is Charles McDonald. Where can they find you, Chuck?
Find me on Blue Sky 4 Verts. Same old stuff. Getting to the swing of things with football. And trying to distract myself right now, you know. Keep my head above water for a few days.
That's what you do. You're right. And Trent Williams. Just working yourself back in shape. It's all right. trying to ignore your surroundings. Everything's okay.
We'll get there. We're going to get there.
You'll get there. Again, sorry for your loss. But also, thank you for everyone joining us today. Subscribe to us. Follow us. Rate us 5 stars, pretty please. And leave us a review. Really, really appreciate that wherever you get your podcasts. You can also watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. So make sure to like and subscribe there as well. And all that good stuff. Thanks to Stone, Madison, and Ingrid behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Also, if anyone watched this on YouTube, I am in a hotel. I never acknowledged that once, I think, on this entire show. I'm at a hotel in Minneapolis. Congratulations to my friend Tommy, who's getting married this weekend in Minneapolis. So everybody, have a great weekend. Let's have a great week too. See you guys next time.